today's feast, Our Lady of Sorrows, it gives us an opportunity to enter into the vast territory of Mary's inner life. Anyone who's familiar with the icon of Our Lady of the Liturgical Life knows that once you enter into Mary's heart, there's a vast array of the mysteries of God unfolding in time, and she ponders them all. So she invites us to do what she does, to ponder these mysteries in her heart. And there's many ways to approach this, because it's a rich territory. I remember last Friday, as we were celebrating Mary's birthday, I pointed out that feast day goes along with this feast day. So the beginning of Mary's life, which we honor when we say Hail Mary, full of grace, goes along with the symbolic end of Mary's life. The mystics refer to today as Mary's martyrdom, her spiritual death. And that's where we honor Mary, Holy Mary, Mother of God. So I made that point last week, that the prayer of the Hail Mary has both these qualities of Mary, her holiness, her fullness of grace, and her motherhood, Mother of God. Her motherhood is revealed in a deeper way at the cross. So last week and this week go together. There's a kind of Marian octave that is celebrated in September. In fact, the whole month of September is dedicated to Our Lady of Sorrows. But this day especially goes with yesterday. I think that's the clear indication of the Church. This is not just an on a whim concern or focus. This is liturgical life. And yesterday's feast was the exaltation of the Holy Cross, and today's feast is Our Lady of Sorrows. They certainly go together, because Jesus on the cross yesterday is watched over or joined by Mary at the foot of the cross. Mary and others, we heard that in the gospel that was just read. Mary's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene, and John, the beloved disciple. If you know that the tradition of this feast, though, you realize that Mary's sorrows are not only at the cross. The tradition of the Church is to ponder the seven sorrows of Mary. And this is Marian devotion over the centuries, recognizing that it's not that Mary was living a life full of roses and joys all her life until suddenly on Good Friday she was sorrowful. No, she had a whole series of sorrows that pierced her. And so the traditional image of Our Lady of Sorrows is with a heart pierced with all these seven swords. Seven fulfillments of Simeon's prophecy that you will be pierced. You yourself, a sword will pierce, so that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. So Mary is a sorrowful mother. This might seem to be in contradiction to what we said yesterday. Yesterday, Feast of the Exaltation of the Cross, I pointed out, is a joyful celebration. Yesterday was looking beyond the sorrow to the triumph. It's a victory celebration. We hold up the cross and we boast about it. This is a great sign of God's victory over sin and death. No sorrow can remain when we understand the greatness of the cross. Now, that was the focus of yesterday, so we might say, well, then Mary should be a joyful mother. She should be a celebrating mother. And of course she is. In heaven, she's not overcome with tears. She is rejoicing in the victory of her son. She's participating in the victory of her son. We celebrated this last month. In August, we celebrate Mary's assumption into heaven and her queenship. She's reigning in glory. But there's no contradiction. Identifying Mary as a glorious, joyful, heavenly queen and as a sorrowful mother, because she's both. And the church puts these two together to make it clear that even though in faith we are a joyful people and we're celebrating the victory of Christ, we still experience sorrow. We are mourning and weeping in a valley of tears. That's certainly true. And I mentioned yesterday all the things that are causing sorrow in our world. And that's our constant awareness that this is a sorrowful journey, this pilgrimage through this world. And our confidence in the goodness and mercy of God does not just make those sorrows disappear. We still pass through them. In fact, this is what the saints say, those who love more are more sorrowful. Those whose hearts are closer to the suffering are more deeply pierced by the suffering. So even though Mary is the most joyful woman that ever lived, the one whose soul rejoices in the Lord, and she said it herself, my soul rejoices in the Lord, my spirit rejoices in God. Even though she's the most full of joy, she's also the most deeply pierced by sorrow, both. Now, I've had women say to me that they identify more with Saint Monica than with the Blessed Virgin Mary, because their experience of sorrow has a lot to do with children who are away from God or who are on a dangerous or self-destructive path. And so the Saint Monica experience is, I'm weeping for the conversion of my children. And that's not what Mary experienced, of course. Her son didn't go astray. He was not in danger of losing the way. He is the way. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. So Mary didn't have that experience in relation to Jesus. But we shouldn't divorce that experience from Mary's experience, because Mary is not only the mother of Jesus, she's the spiritual mother of all of us and of all children who go astray. So yes, she does have the Saint Monica experience. In fact, even more than Saint Monica, because she experiences more deeply that pain of seeing a child go astray. Anyway, I bring up that Saint Monica comparison because I want to remind everyone, maybe mothers know this already, but I'll just bring it out anyway. I'll remind you that even if your children come back to the faith and become Saint Augustine, there is still a sorrow associated with a mother's love. Sometimes the mothers, the Saint Monica mothers, say, well, if only my son would come back to the church, or if only my daughter would, you know, leave that bad relationship, then I'd be happy. And of course, you'd be happy. Everyone's happy when someone comes back to the right path. But there's still a sorrow that goes with being a mother. In fact, there's a sorrow that goes with love. There's no love that doesn't have a sword attached to it. Love is not all about making us feel better. Love is about choosing what is good for the other person, choosing that good at the price of our advantage. And so to love someone purely and deeply is to be pierced. And this is what Mary experienced all the time. Now, we talk about the seven sorrows, but there's practically every time Mary gets mentioned in the scriptures, there's something sorrowful in her experience. I'll just mention a few of them. Well, we think of the loss and finding of Jesus in the temple. That's one of the seven traditional sorrows of Mary. And we say, well, she was sorrowful because she lost him. That was her sorrow. But there's another sorrow associated with finding him. Because remember, when she finds him in the temple, when Joseph and Mary find him in the temple, and they say, well, you know, why did you do this to us? We've been searching for you with great anxiety. And Jesus says, Why were you searching for me? Do you see how that would pierce Mary's heart? Why are you searching for me? What, as if to say, I don't belong to you. I'm not entirely under your control. I have something else to do. I belong to my Father's house. I'm about my Father's business. And even though it's true, it still would pierce Mary's heart to have him say, why were you searching for me? I'll give you another example along these same lines. And this is not one of the seven sorrows of Mary. At the wedding feast of Cana, remember they ran out of wine, and Mary says they have no more wine. Remember Jesus' response? What does this have to do with me? How does your concern have anything to do with me? My hour has not yet come. You see what it is? It's a distancing that Jesus places between his entire dedication to doing the will of the Father and the role of Mary. Now, we know that he did do the miracle, and Mary was instrumental in the unfolding of his hour, yes. But that expression, what does your concern have to do with me? What do you have to do with me? It has to have pierced Mary's heart. Like, it had to have been experienced. Well, okay, I'm not the one who determines what you do. Our relationship is not the bottom line here. The will of the Father is the bottom line. And you, Jesus, have to do the will of the Father. And I have to experience the sorrow of letting go of you so that you can fulfill your mission. That's what true love does. True love doesn't cling or dominate or manipulate or control. True love allows the good to unfold. And that's a painful experience. I say every mother knows this. Any good mother knows that you can't hold on to a child. You have to let the child grow. You have to let the child go. You have to let the child be who God created him or her to be and fulfill his or her mission from God. And that's a painful distancing that goes on with love. Now, it's a good thing. Mary in no way opposed Jesus when he said, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour has not yet come. Mary didn't say, well, yes, it has come. You better do what I say. She silently accepted what Jesus said. And then Jesus recognized the will of the Father was to do that miracle of changing the water into wine. So Mary didn't oppose the will of the Father in any way, but she did experience that pain of letting go, which is the way love works. Okay, now we know the other sorrows of Mary, the different experiences where her heart was pierced, but it comes to its most poignant and most painful moment at the cross. And we have another one of these statements of Jesus that indicates that he doesn't belong to her in the way that he belongs to the Father. It's just like, there's another one. This is not one of the traditional sorrows of Mary, but when Jesus says, who's my mother? Remember that? Who's my mother? Well, how could that, Mary understood it, I'm sure, and she accepted it, but it still hurts to have somebody say, who's my mother? So that's the kind of sorrow that goes with love. Anyway, this one at the cross is the most deeply piercing. Mary's standing there watching her son die. That's the worst thing a parent can experience, is the death of a child. Well, especially the painful death of a child, the unjust death of a child, the brutal torture of a child, yes. So she's experiencing all this. And then Jesus, it says, he saw his mother and the disciple there whom he loved, and he said to his mother, now what we would think he would say is, mother, don't be concerned. This is the will of the Father. We're accomplishing the mission that we are sent to do. Instead, he says, woman. He doesn't even say mother. He says, woman, behold your son. As if to say, not me anymore. Now, the beloved disciple, take a maternal role for him. And Of course, this is a profound opening up, a profound expansion of Mary's maternal heart, but it's also a piercing. Like, how could she not feel that the pain of losing one son, the best son that any woman could ever have, in exchange for a lesser substitute, John? She embraced it fully. She never shied away from the sorrow. And then he says to the disciple, "Behold your mother." He doesn't say, "John, take care of my mother. John, when I'm gone, be sure to take care of my mother." He says, "Behold your mother." He establishes this maternal relationship between Mary and the beloved disciple. This is a great gift for all of us, that we are actually children of Mary now, that she is given to us as our mother. But it's still a sword. It's still a sorrowful experience to lose a child, even when you gain more children. So I'm just bringing this out because I think this helps us understand how love works and how motherhood works. Now, we're not all mothers. Men are not mothers, but not all women are mothers either. But all of us, when we love, we do have a life-giving role to play, and that is when we are sacrificing what we prefer, or even our own good, for the good of another, we're life-giving. We are spiritual mothers in that way. And this is what is really beautiful about this feast. And this is why I said at the beginning, Father Francis referred to Mary not as Our Lady of Sorrows, which emphasizes the sorrow, but as Our Sorrowful Mother, which emphasizes the connection between sorrow and motherhood. This is the richness of this. It's, yes, she's Our Lady of Sorrows. She was pierced countless times by sorrow. But everybody has sorrow. Not all sorrows become life-giving unless they're accepted the way Mary accepts sorrow. This is the message for us. I mean, we're mourning and weeping in this valley of tears. Are we going to get the benefit of it? And are others going to benefit from our participation in the passion? If we say yes at the foot of the cross, like Mary, with Mary, then the life that comes from Jesus on the cross is shared, and we have this maternal role. It's an extraordinary mystery, extraordinary gift, which makes this a very positive, a joyful feast. Yes, it's Mary's sorrow. Yes, it's our sorrow. But it's an awareness that sorrow, joined with the sacrifice of Christ, is life-giving. And that's a redemptive sorrow, redemptive sacrifice, which changes everything. So let us learn from Mary at the foot of the cross to continue to say yes, to continue to have faith, even when things look like they're going completely wrong. They couldn't get worse. Well, when we say yes to God, what is terrible is transformed into a channel of divine grace. Mary's the one who shows us how to persevere in times of sorrow.